Hello everyone and welcome to Planet FM Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6. My name is Judy and I'm an alcoholic and will be chairing our meeting this morning. Could you please help me open the meeting with a serenity prayer?
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Thank you all for joining us this morning. Today, our speakers are Anna, Sam and Jordan, and they will be sharing on their experience, strength and hope. Okay, would you like to start sharing with us, please, Anna?
Good morning. I'm Anna. I'm an alcoholic, a very grateful alcoholic. Looking back, I loved alcohol. I started early in my teens. I think I even got drunk back then, but everybody did. It seemed normal and it wasn't frowned upon. And it was problematic, but I remember feeling like I still had some control over it. No matter how drunk I got, I was still aware that I'd have work the next day, or I'd try and start early to finish early, so I'd still manage to get enough sleep. It wasn't really pulled up on me. I didn't feel the consequences of my drinking back then, and there was no comments made about it. And other people sometimes drank more than I did, you know, and I thought they were alcoholic or they had a problem. And I was soon to learn a lot more about that later on. I grew up with an alcoholic father, and I remember thinking as a young girl, I didn't want to be like him. I hated the way life was, with him. I was just really, anxious all the time, and I just swore I'd never become like my father. I was adamant, and here I am today. I don't know at what point my drinking changed, where I crossed that invisible line of losing control, where my awareness had gone, my awareness of, you know, I've got to get home, I've got work, I've still got responsibilities, somewhere that got lost. And I think that was when I first felt that fear of where alcohol was taking me. It didn't stop me. It didn't slow me down. It just made me a little paranoid. I became quite reclusive about who I was and what I did. I didn't share my life with anyone. I didn't want to talk about what I did in the weekends because all I was doing was drinking and I was ashamed of it and embarrassed to tell anyone. And I really didn't have anything, any input in life. I didn't like what I was becoming. And I used to joke about my drinking to myself and think at times I was sitting outside drinking by myself thinking this is so alcoholic, you know, this is not normal. It's antisocial and it's not where I want to be, but I felt more comfortable than I did around other people. You know, I'd left the bars behind, what I thought was social, which actually wasn't. I was sick of being looked upon. I was sick of people telling me, you had too much again, or being the one to be put in a taxi. I was sick of the consequences. And it wasn't till 2007 at work when my manager, pulled me in, and I was just waiting for that moment to happen. I knew it would come. I felt like life was spiraling out of control and I still had a job and I was hanging on to it with tooth and nail because I knew that would be the next thing I'd lose if I carried on like this. But when they pulled me in and said, we need you to go to rehab and get some help, I felt nothing but relief. I remember surrendering right then and there and thinking, that's it. You know, the cat's out of the bag. They all know now. I don't have to hide it. It's not a secret. They've all seen me. And I felt that relief was more powerful than the fear I had of losing my job or being reprimanded, which didn't happen. So I ended up in rehab in 2007 for 4 weeks, and I thought that alcohol was the problem. And I thought that I would leave there fixed and that I would be better. And I left there, and I don't know if it was weeks or months later, I picked up thinking, I'll just be really careful now. You know, I've learned enough. I think I know enough. I've just got to be careful. I never accepted help. I didn't take any heed to the disease of alcoholism when I left rehab. And so the next 13 years, unbeknown to me, was going to be progressive drinking. My disease, untreated, was going to get worse. And the circumstances were just different. You know, I carried on going to work. I don't know how I held on to my job. I personally think it was a change of management. I was hidden amongst the changes, and it wasn't really brought to anyone's attention. That's the only way I can think I held on to it. But yeah, I just drank at home. I went to work and drank every night, a few bottles of wine. I drank in the weekends. I was a daily drinker. I didn't have any friends. I didn't know anyone, because I wasn't out there meeting people. You know, I'd shut off the relationships, I had before rehab. The last one being pretty toxic. And I thought if I ended that now, it would be the end of me. And that's why I thought rehab would fix everything. You know, I'd put away the past of my life and I'd come out this new person. But yeah, I suffered the disease of alcoholism threefold, and it's not just the alcohol. So yeah, 13 more years of drinking, hurting a lot of people. Pancreatitis I developed in my late 20s, and I was in and out of hospital with pancreatitis. Had close to probably 30 admissions now, over a 20 year span, which, I'm not proud of, and I'm ashamed to say that. But that's a reality of, the insanity of my disease, that in and out of hospital, when the doctors tell you, you know, you've got zero tolerance of alcohol, you know, you will die if you continue to drink. And I would listen for a week and get a bit scared. And the fear would keep me sober for a short period of time. And within a matter of weeks or months, I was back in hospital again, you know, forgetting the pain, the ambulance calls, my parents having to visit me in hospital. And yeah, it was just a lot of shame and remorse and that incomprehensible demoralization which followed. But I was determined that I was going to somehow fix myself if I knew enough, read enough books, that there must be some other solution. I had the geographicals, going on chat rooms, trying to find people overseas that might understand me. Finding different places, environments might change me. But I still ended up back at home, with myself, no change, and no solutions having been found. I ended up in CADS, which I learned a little bit from, but I remember feeling out of place there because I didn't want to cut down. You know, I'd wanted to cut down, and to me it was all or nothing. There was no point in drinking until I had my quota. You know, as males would drink juice. You know, there was either all or nothing. So for me, I didn't want to learn to cut down. I didn't want to. I knew I couldn't. So I didn't feel sort of in my place there. And, you know, when I ended up in AA, after surrendering and a level of desperation, which I thought was going to be it, I discovered that there was a new way of living. And I discovered I suffered from a disease that wasn't just the alcohol, that was just a physical allergy, but I suffered from the isms. And it wasn't till I came into AA that I still had some more learning, you know, and then some. I had 90 days of sobriety, and at 90 days I wasn't working a program. I was just physically sober. And I thought, now I'm ready for life and I'm going to start getting my life together. And it all fell apart within the matter of a month. And that was just before lockdown. And I drank, I used that as an excuse, and I could drink every day. And at the end of that lockdown, I called my sponsor and said, I have had enough. And she said, are you willing to go to any length now? And I said, yes, and I meant it. And that was my first day of meeting her at 10 o'clock in the morning. She picked me up. And that was my first day that my last drink was the day before. So I've learned now this is a plan of action. You know, I fought this so much when I first came in. It's not that I didn't want it. I knew I was an alcoholic. You know, I wanted what those people had and I related. I wasn't different. But I still thought I'm succumbed to a life of this. And yet when I look back, I thought, well, what am I sacrificing? You know, my life is drinking every night, no friends, I'm not offering anything. I'm useless. I've got nothing to offer. And I'm this self-centered person. And I didn't want to be that person anymore. And that's what AA has gifted me. It's not just about sobriety, physical sobriety. It's the mental, the emotional, and the spiritual malady, which I didn't have. You know, I have a faith today, which I never had before. I've always had a belief in something, but I never relied on it. And that was the difference for me, is coming to learn to rely on it. And it's the people that kept me coming back. It's a program of action. I had the steps that helped me learn how to live. Because that is my problem today, is learning how to live. It's not just about staying sober, but that was the first thing that had to go. It wasn't the last or the only, it was just the first thing that had to go. So I'm really grateful to be sober today and to keep trudging this life. You know, it doesn't have to be a hard trudge. It's pretty simple, but I'm not sacrificing anything at all. It's not a chore, it's part of my life now, and I'm very grateful for it. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Anna, for sharing. Sam, would you like to share now, please?
Yeah, thank you. Kia ora whanau, I'm Sam, grateful recovering alcoholic. I suppose I was just sharing a little bit of where I've come from with alcohol use. In my younger age, sort of early teenage years, it was very acceptable to drink. I didn't drink, but I grew up with alcoholics per se in my family, you know, but it was very acceptable to drink a lot, not within the home and that, but with my peers, you know. Early teenage years it was acceptable to drink whenever we wanted to, and I found that alcohol, I didn't just drink alcohol for the taste, you know, to have a beer or two. I drank to get drunk. I drank to black out. And it took me in and out of jail. It took me ruined relationships, ruined connections. I lost the trust of my family, my friends. I lost jobs. I lost my license, you know, I lost my freedom, I lost everything, I lost, car crashed cars, lost partners. I actually worked very hard in my younger years, fishing on the fishing boats, and, I bought a house by the time I was 21. Through alcohol and bad decisions and living a life that wasn't righteous. I lost that house. I sold that house. I spent all the money. Ended up in jail with nothing. It took everything, you know, alcohol took everything from me. And I let it. At that age, I didn't see that it was alcohol. You know, I couldn't understand that alcohol was doing this to my life. So, you know, I persisted to drink alcohol. And through my 20s, I came into the rooms, into the AA, you know, into the rooms in my hometown. It was a very small group, and it was mainly to tick a box. Back then, it was mainly to tick a box, and, you know, it was court ordered. My lawyer said it would look good for me, so I did. I went into the rooms, and you know, it was like four people in this group that I went to, and they were all old fellas, and I was like, you know, this, what's going on here? This is for me. They were talking about, you know, God and high power and to submit, you know, and to surrender. And surrender was not in my vocabulary. You know, it was something that I was comfortable with doing. because at the time I thought that was weak. I thought that, you know, that I'd be looked upon by my peers as weak, as, you know, I had my car around the back of the AA meetings. You know, I parked way down the road and walked down. So I didn't, you know, I wasn't seen there. I was ashamed because I hadn't surrendered to my alcohol use. And, you know, my addiction with alcohol, I was ashamed of it, and I didn't want anyone else to know. But I guess, like, listening to the people in those rooms and that, I still thought then in the younger years that wasn't for me, that I was different, that I could do it by myself. And I was wrong. I was wrong. It landed me in jail about 5 times throughout my years. A lot of violence, loss of people, you know, that I cared about, not through death, but through me and my behaviour with alcohol. You know, I was a violent person. Crime, loved crime. Yeah, you know, I'd sometimes use alcohol to, you know, make me feel better about doing these sorts of things, and it would change my mind. You know, it's so easy for me to be in a sad situation or an angry situation or whatever. It amplified whatever I was feeling, you know, or dulled it. Without dealing with the problem, I'd use alcohol as something to just, you know, either dull my sadness and make me feel happier, or yeah, use it to do crime, things that I was maybe a little bit nervous about. It was horrible, actually, thinking about it. And but coming into the rooms now, and I did a rehab a few years ago, and thought that I could just go into that, finish it, and I'd be fixed. But that's not how it works. Like, I think Anna just shared previously that there's no end date, you know, like this is a lifestyle. And just going into a rehab and getting clean is not, that's the start, you know, living AA, living the lifestyle of AA and the 12 steps and the suggested things is what's going to keep you clean. That's what's kept me clean. So I came back to recovery this time ready, and I was sick of using alcohol. I was sick of the jail. I was sick of the people looking down on me. You know, I was sick of the of losing healthy connections. Now, I've surrendered. The word surrender means the most to me now. I've surrendered to a higher power. I've surrendered to AA. I've surrendered to the 12 steps. I do everything now that's suggested, plus some. I do, you know, service within the groups. I'm here talking on the radio to try and spread the message. Active listening, you know, active listening, trying to pick up things of other people's recovery that can help me, you know, and help me in my walk. There's thousands, hundreds of thousands of people in recovery, and if I can just pick up, you know, one thing in a meeting. I do meetings every night. Sometimes, tonight I'm doing two. I've got planned to do two, because they are the main thing that helps me within my recovery, is going to meetings, helping spread the message, opening my mouth, sharing, listening, actively listening to other people with newcomers, but mainly the old-timers, the people that have walked the walk, that have, you know, that are a sponsor. I have myself a sponsor now. I am working the steps, and it's enlightening. It's very enlightening for me. I'm digging deep into the person that has taken me this long to become, and I'm trying to, you know, open it up and change the way that I was living. And yeah, so if I have any message to spread, it would be AA is the way to go. It's go deep into it. Recovery's cool. Recovery's awesome. The gifts of recovery are even cooler. But yeah, I'll just leave it there. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much, Sam. That was great. And could you now share with us, please, Jordan?
Yeah, kia ora whanau, Jordan, alcoholic. I'm very grateful to be here and grateful to have been offered this place to talk about my alcoholism and how I'm sorting it. So, just a little bit about myself. I, started drinking at a young age, as most of us did, and I drank with my father from 14, and was allowed to do what I wanted, and was allowed to drink as much as I wanted. And, you know, I blacked up from the very first time I drank, and then just learned how to do crime and how to live a life of alcoholism, really. I just wanted to be around my dad, and And that's all that I knew how to do was to be able to drink and not go to school, not hang out with people my age. So I used to get dropped off a lot back up to my mum's and then try and, you know, get back into a normal teenage life. And I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know how to, I wasn't in a mindset to go back to school or drink normally in the weekends with the teenagers. I would just, you know, I'd drink every day how I had learnt and would just make a mess of myself, really. And, you know, I remember my mum used to, was a teacher at Wellsford Primary, and, you know, the kids would be going to school saying that they've seen me drunk up the road at 8 in the morning walking to school, and that was my life for a couple of years, you know, from 14 to 16, and then I'd try to get my life back on track. But I'd always go back to drinking hard out with my dad or with my friends and do crime and get into trouble, and, you know, that was my life for a long time. Till about 19, and then, you know, I started getting into the workforce. I, got a job and would do good there. You know, I got, sober for a bit, and, you know, I thought that was, I got sober for a woman, and, thought that this was my life now, you know, that was going to help me, but it never did. I thought that being sober was going to fix all my problems, and it didn't. It just, I was still an angry person. I was still didn't know how to deal with my emotions. You know, I'd still throw the toys out of the cot, and then I'd eventually get back onto the booze and ruin everything that I'd worked hard for. So, you know, I've been in and out of the rooms. My mum brought me to the rooms when I was 18, and I never wanted to be there. I had accepted that my life was that I was just going to be a drunk. You know, that that's all I knew. That's all I liked doing, loved doing. That's what my dad done. So that's what I was going to do. And yeah, it just took me into jail, took me into crime, more crime, took me into ruining relationships, treating my family with no respect. You know, I was all about myself and when I, what I was going to do for myself to get my next drink. And, you know, so I've been in and out of the room since I was 18. I'm 33 now. And, you know, this last time in jail, I really thought about what my life was, what I was doing with my life. You know, I was over going to jail. I was over sitting there and, thinking about all the people who are moving on in their life and me just sitting in there, and I didn't want to be 50 sitting in a cell. So I said to myself that I'm going to put what I did into my alcoholism, into my life that I was living, I was going to put into my recovery, you know, and that's what I've done. I've got out of jail. I'm active in the meetings. I've got a sponsor. I'm doing my steps. And it's, I've figured out that it's not just about doing the steps, it's about putting the steps, putting the stuff that I learn in the steps into my life. And, you know, when I make a mistake that, you know, I apologize. You know, if I treat my partner disrespectfully or angrily, I apologize to her. If I, get angry to someone, I try and fix it. I don't just, you know, dwell on it and let that, escalate into a you know, escalate anyway. So yeah, that's what I'm doing with my life. You know, I've got within, you know, six months of being out of jail and being on this path, you know, I have my family back in my life. I just like to see my dad sober. My dad's 6 years sober, and you know, proud as of him. And I've got my twin brother, my mum, my partner, and the kids in my life, and, you know, I'm lucky to still have all them, because I didn't care one bit about them when I was in my in those old days. I just cared about myself, and I was not a nice person to anyone. And it just shows that, you know, I've figured out if I do the next right thing, the next right thing happens, and yeah, just doing these steps, talking to people in the rooms, talking to the ones who are winning, talking to the ones with the clean time. You know, another big one for me was not letting go of my old life, not letting go of my old friends. So, you know, every time I've been to a couple of rehabs and I have been, you know, sober for bits here and there, but every time I would never let go of my friends. I would always go back to them, always go back to where I'm from. I'm from Wellsford, and I'd always go back there and think that, nah, I can do it. You know, I can still do crime, and I can still associate with people who are in that lifestyle, drinking and that, and not do it. But, you know, sit in the barber's too long enough and you're going to get a haircut, and that's what would always happen to me. So this time, you know, I don't associate with anyone who drinks. I don't associate with my old mates. Thank you. And, I just try and remember to do the next right thing. I try to tell myself, you know, that I'm worth it. That, you know, that I deserve a good life, because I didn't think that I deserved a good life the way that I was brought up. I didn't think that. I thought that this was my life. But, you know, if anyone is out there thinking that, just realize I've changed my mindset, and I know that I'm worth it. I know that I deserve it. And it's all because of these rooms and because of the work I put in. You know, it's not easy. I still muck up. I still get it wrong. But, you know, I've just been put up to running a supported living house, and you know, I'm grateful as for that. I'm helping men in recovery, and yeah, and I'm it's helping me, and I'm very grateful to AA, very grateful to get this opportunity, and thank you to the other two sharers, and yeah, thank you for this opportunity. Kia ora.
Thank you so much, all of you, for sharing. What wonderful shares. And I'm afraid that brings us to the end. We don't have time for any more. So thank you to Anna, Sam and Jordan for joining us in the studio today, and to all of you for listening. We are on air every Sunday morning at 10:45 a.m. here on Planet FM 104.6. If you wish to speak to someone directly, please call 0800 AA Works. That's 0800 229 6757, or go to the AA website at aa.org.nz, where you can find the whole raft of information. Could we all now close the meeting with the Serenity Prayer, please?
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you.
Sky Tower, Planet FM on 104.6.
Auckland Council has the goal of zero waste to landfill by 2040. That means recycling, composting, reusing and repurposing materials. Here's another zero waste tip on Planet FM. Here's a tip on using your food scraps bin properly. Be sure to use Auckland Council's pink caddy liners or paper bags to collect food scraps. To reduce odours, empty your kitchen caddy every 2 to 3 days. Store your kitchen caddy under the sink and keep your curbside bin in the shade between collections. A total of 147,000 tonnes was saved from landfill services in 2024. Find out all the info at wastenothing.co.nz.
Hello, kia ora my friend. I'm Susie Cato, inviting you to join me for New Zealand's favourite kids show on Planet FM. It's called Susie and Friends, and there's songs, stories and prizes, jokes, reviews, birthdays and shout-outs. And kids just like you. Go to susie.co.nz for more information. I'd love you to be a friend. Just listen to the radio Sunday afternoons at 3:15 for Susie and Friends on Planet FM 104.6. Susie and Friends.